Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. Bet that every person in the United States agrees that they would like to spend less money on health care. Well, I guess there's probably a few health insurer CEOs who might disagree. But in general, we have articles today about things that are being done or considered as ways to reduce health care costs. Some are quite surprising, such as United Healthcare saying that they will pass rebates from drug companies on to consumers. So we'll look at the insurers, accountable care organizations, healthcare consumers, and also at the problems that come with short-term insurance plans. Our readings, then, will center on healthcare dollars. We start with something from MarketWatch, written by Holly Lawrence and published on March 8, 2018, 5 ways to lower healthcare costs in the U.S. As nearly everyone knows, America's healthcare costs are astronomical and likely to continue rising. A health affairs study just projected national healthcare spending will grow an average of 5.5% every year through 2026. As Martin Gaynor, an economics professor at Carnegie Mellon University, said at last week's West Health Institute 2018 Healthcare Costs Innovation Summit in Washington, D.C., healthcare spending is high, and it is ultimately unsustainable. What can be done about it? The answer to that question is critically important to all Americans, but especially to those in their 50s or 60s, who are some of the hardest hit by this healthcare cost crisis, said West Health CEO and President Shelley Lyford. They tend to have high out-of-pocket costs. Healthcare expenses can be a huge outlay in retirement, too. For so many, one severe illness could mean financial ruin or even bankruptcy, Lyford said. A recent RBC Wealth Management study estimated that a healthy 65-year-old couple today can expect to spend more than $400,000 on health care in retirement. At the West Health Summit, which drew around 500 attendees, Gaynor and numerous experts offered recommendations to bring health care costs down. West Health is a family of nonpartisan nonprofits focused on healthcare research, policy, and philanthropy. Said Lyford, "We have a healthcare system that is draining our resources, weakening our country, and limiting our ability to fulfill our most basic responsibilities to our citizens. It doesn't have to be this way. We must do better." Here are 5 solutions the summit speakers proposed to lower healthcare costs. Number 1, give patients and healthcare consumers more information. Several panelists talked about the wide variation in price for the same medical treatment in the same metropolitan area. In Atlanta, Gaynor said, it can cost 600% more to have a colonoscopy in one location than another. The problem is, the patients usually don't know about local price variations because they're generally not given cost information by healthcare providers or insurers. That's not true in other countries. There are prices on walls in doctors' offices in France. In Australia, people are entitled to binding estimates before they go in for elective surgery, said Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal, editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News. Carol Raphael, senior advisor, Man at Health Solutions, and former board chair of AARP, said, I think we shouldn't only talk about cost, because if you just tell people to go to the lowest cost option, that can be frightening. We have to talk about value. And where are you going to get the best results, the most effective outcomes for the lowest costs? And we have to enable people to figure that out. Dr. Mark Smith, clinical professor of medicine at University of California, San Francisco, and co-chair of the guiding committee of the Healthcare Payment Learning and Action Network, said that in order for healthcare consumers to make smarter choices and save money, the healthcare system needs a greater availability of usable data on cost and quality than we have now. One recent example of this kind of usable data, Kaiser Health News and NPR just began offering a new feature, Bill of the Month. Its dissection of real medical bills educates consumers and shames some providers. And a second, number two of the solutions from the summit speakers on how to lower healthcare costs, give patients and healthcare consumers more power. Most patients I speak to in this system feel powerless, said Rosenthal, and that's what I think we have to change. Smith told the audience, it's important for patients and consumers to vote with their feet and with their wallets for high-value plans and providers, because that creates an incentive for plans and providers to create greater value. He also said he'd like to see more self-care, and thinks we will with improved healthcare technology. Referring to patients on dialysis, Smith said, there's a whole world of possibilities of how we could substitute patient-driven care for expensive, professionally-driven care. Dr. Mark McClellan, director of the Robert J. Margolis Center for Health Policy at Duke University and a former commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, said there are programs not only outside the U.S., but in the U.S., that are doing self-administered dialysis at home. That leads to better control of the progression of the disease, is more convenient for the patient, and is less costly. Number three, lower the number of medical tests for patients. Dr. Atul Gawande, a surgeon, writer, public health researcher, and Next Avenue's 2015 Influencer of the Year, mentioned a study of more than 1 million Medicare patients asking how often they received one of the 26 tests or treatments that were widely recognized to be of no benefit or to, in fact, be of outright harm. Up to 42% of patients received unnecessary tests in 1 year, Gawande said. His mother was one of them. Rosenthal said doctors must convince patients not to expect or feel they need to get a test during every medical visit. That could be difficult. Raphael called the current culture of medicine the rescue culture, saying, you come in and you have an infection. You don't want to hear that it's a viral infection. Go home and rest. You want it to be fixed. But Raphael added, if we have the space, the reimbursement system, and to some extent the technique to have conversations with patients that explain what the risks are, the potential benefits, the dangers with unnecessary radiation, they would make different choices. Number four, increase competition among healthcare providers. Gaynor explained that physician practices have been consolidating and the number of hospital mergers has been high. A recent study by two Federal Trade Commission economists, he said, looked at the merger of six physician practices in Pennsylvania a few years ago, and they found price increases of up to 25% and 15% for different insurers. Gaynor estimated that about 1,700 hospital mergers have occurred over the past 20 years. Most urban areas now have just one to three dominant hospital systems. The lack of competition has a large part to do with why healthcare costs are high and rising, Gaynor said. If hospitals have no local competition, he added, researchers found that the prices are 12.5% higher on average. Evidence shows across the board, when there's less potential competition in a market, hospital prices are higher, Gaynor said. And he added, if prices are high, they stay high. Gaynor also noted that a study of Medicare beneficiaries who had heart attacks discovered that those treated at a hospital that didn't face a lot of competition were 1.46 percentage points more likely to die in the year following the heart attack than if they'd been treated in a hospital in the area that faced a lot of competition. So, monopoly kills. What's more, Gaynor said, the largest four health insurers have 76% of the fully funded market nationally. And the largest two insurers have more than 70% of the market in half of the nation's metro areas. He said he sees no signs of healthcare industry consolidation slowing down. I think the strongest studies show that quality suffers when there's less competition, Gaynor said. More competition leads to better quality of care, and less competition leads to substantially worse patient outcomes. Lastly, number five, let Medicare negotiate prescription drug costs for consumers. Numerous speakers called for allowing Medicare to negotiate prescription drugs for Americans 65 and older. That might happen soon. There is growing consensus to allow Medicare, the largest purchaser of prescription drugs, to negotiate on price, Lyford told me. This will help bring prices down tremendously. Our next article comes from STAT, and it was published on March 6, 2018, and written by Arthur Tim Garson, Jr. And this is titled, One of Many Problems with Short-Term Insurance Plans, Consumers Can't Understand Them. Most people try to avoid reading their health insurance policies. That's what employers and insurance agents are for. Anyone who plans to buy short-term health insurance, though, will need to read the policy carefully. The Trump administration recently announced plans to allow consumers to buy short-term health insurance plans that last for up to a year. They are currently capped at 90 days. Short-term health insurance used to be a niche product, primarily used by healthy people who wanted to have insurance between jobs or for other gaps in coverage. With an increase in the duration of these plans, a growing number of insured people might see them as an attractive, meaning less expensive, alternative to other forms of insurance, including plans that comply with the Affordable Care Act. Many won't understand what they're buying. Let me start with the basics. Short-term health insurance plans don't necessarily cover the essential health benefits. Things like emergency services, hospitalization, pregnancy and newborn care, mental health care, and prescription drugs that are the hallmark of ACA plans. They generally have relatively low monthly premiums, but very high deductibles. I've been researching what consumers are likely to encounter when they investigate short-term plans. The first one I came across announced in a huge font its monthly premium of $154.80 per month. Much smaller text listed the massive $12,500 deductible, as well as the $10,000 maximum on coinsurance, the amount of health care expenses individuals are responsible for after reaching their deductible. We've seen these types of insurance plans before. Between 2 and 4 million people had plans like this before the Affordable Care Act went into effect in 2010. These were the types of plans that President Obama referred to when he said, "If you like your health care plan, you can keep it." He was wrong. Under the ACA, many individual health insurance plans could not meet the criteria for real coverage. Back then, Consumer Reports said that these plans were so riddled with loopholes, limits, exclusions, and gotchas that they wouldn't come close to covering expenses if the individuals they covered fell seriously ill. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners, the National Governors Association, and others issued a consumer alert on plans like these. Most people did not know how bad the coverage was because they never needed to use it. These plans are now coming back, but this time many of them come with a disclaimer. Here's an example. This is not qualifying health coverage, minimum essential coverage, that satisfies the health coverage requirement of the Affordable Care Act. Is this an adequate warning for the public? No. Many consumers are unlikely to understand that the insurer is really saying, "Be careful, this plan doesn't cover much." The description of another short-term plan's coverage exclusions, the part where it says the insurance doesn't cover pre-existing conditions, mental health care, pregnancy, and other conditions, is written at a grade 15 level, the equivalent of a college graduate. Given the high stakes, the disclaimers, exclusions, and other parts of a short-term insurance plan should be written clearly and not at a college reading level, because nearly half of Americans have reading skills that are considered basic, meaning grammar school level or below. In other words, only a fraction of the people who really need to understand the messages embedded in the fine print of short-term health insurance packages truly do. So they'll continue once again to buy insurance that covers little. This is a sad state of affairs. Essential health information, like the content of a short-term health insurance contract, needs to be understandable by the people reading it. Information like this should be customized for the reader's education level. For example, health insurers shouldn't simply provide a hyperlink to the definition of deductible in their fine print. They need to explain what it really means in terms that every American can understand. People who buy high-deductible health insurance should, in theory, be smarter shoppers, since they have more skin in the game. But only 14% of people with high-deductible plans check the quality or the cost of a healthcare service they're considering. That's not because they aren't interested in this information. It's that we've failed to provide them with it in a format they can understand. If short-term health insurance plans are really what consumers want, then insurers should have no problem making crystal clear exactly what patients get or don't get in exchange for their premiums. And if patients are surprised when the bills start coming in, then the insurer hasn't done a good enough job explaining its coverage. Next, coming from the New York Times, written by Reed Abelson March. Reed Abelson, and published on March 6, 2018, UnitedHealthcare says it will pass on rebates from drug companies to consumers. In response to growing consumer frustration over drug prices, UnitedHealthcare, one of the nation's largest health insurers, said on Tuesday that it would stop keeping millions of dollars in discounts it gets from drug companies and share them with its customers. Dan Schumacher, the president of UnitedHealthcare, said the new policy will apply to more than 7 million people who are enrolled in the company's fully insured plans beginning next year. The benefit could range from a few dollars to hundreds of dollars to over 1,000, Mr. Schumacher said. Not all drugs come with rebates that are paid to the health plan. People in plans with high deductibles who buy drugs that carry large rebates will see the greatest savings, Mr. Schumacher said. Insurers like UnitedHealthcare, whose parent company also owns a large pharmacy benefit manager, OptumRx, have come under increasing public pressure as drug prices, especially for brand-name drugs, continue to rise, angering consumers and lawmakers. The decision by UnitedHealthcare is the latest in a series of steps taken by drug makers and health plans to try to lessen public discontent over drug prices, even as the companies spar over who is to blame. Aiming to deflect criticism, the pharmaceutical industry has increasingly pointed the finger at both insurers and pharmacy managers for not sharing the rebates with customers filling prescriptions. The Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, the industry trade group, rolled out an advertising campaign, Share the Savings, last year to make the case that by passing on the discounts, plans could significantly lower patients' out-of-pocket bills. The group called UnitedHealthcare's decision a step in the right direction. Insurers, including UnitedHealthcare, contend that they already use the money from discounts to lower premiums for all their customers and argue the real issue is the high cost of so many drugs. But UnitedHealthcare seems to have blinked, signaling what could be a coming shift away from the system of convoluted deals struck between the drug companies and these middlemen, said Adam J. Fine, president of Pembroke Consulting, a research firm. Although the new policy will only affect a fraction of the company's customers, it's one more step on the path of creating a more transparent pharmacy supply chain. The amount of rebates can vary widely, with some drugs like Humira and Enbrel that treat rheumatoid arthritis being deeply discounted. Others, like medicines for rare conditions, where there's no significant competition, have little to no rebates. Patients, employers, and the public have little information on what any one drug costs and whether the discounts ultimately flow back to customers. The industry is taking criticism from a lot of people, said Eric Gordon, a business professor at the University of Michigan. It is significant that UnitedHealthcare felt compelled to do something, he said. The Trump administration recently floated the idea of requiring private drug plans under Medicare to pass on the savings to consumers at the pharmacy counter. On Tuesday, Alex M. Azar II, a former executive at Eli Lilly and the new Secretary of Health and Human Services, called UnitedHealthcare's move a prime example of the type of movement toward transparency and lower drug prices for millions of patients that the Trump administration is championing. But insurers have resisted the idea that they be forced to pass on the savings in Medicare drug plans, arguing that it would result in significantly higher premiums for everyone. Federal officials estimate that consumers buying the drugs would save on average from $45 to $132 a month under the proposal. But then premiums for all Medicare beneficiaries would increase anywhere from an estimated $14 to $44 a month. United Health Group, United Healthcare's parent, opposes the Medicare proposal because it would raise premiums sharply for older people. By contrast, the company's plans offered through private employers would have a minimal effect on premiums, Mr. Schumacher said. The benefit to the individual is meaningful. Employers who self-insure already have the option of passing the discounts on to customers, Mr. Schumacher said. CVS Health, a large pharmacy benefit manager, allows employers to share the discount with their workers and has offered rebates to its own employees since 2013. OptumRx also offers the option of sharing the discount directly with consumers. But while some employers seem interested, it is not taken off, Mr. Schumacher said. We have some customer interest, he said. It's in the early innings. Our last article today, written by Zachary Tracer for Bloomberg, was also published on March 8, 2018, and is titled, Amazon Isn't the Only Retail Giant Trying to Remake Healthcare. Amazon.com Inc. says it wants to remake healthcare for its workers, but its biggest rival is beating it to the punch. Walmart Inc., the largest private employer in the U.S., has been buying healthcare for its workers directly from providers in six different regions, bypassing insurers who usually negotiate with doctors and hospitals. The retailer is trying to find out if its formidable purchasing power can squeeze out middlemen and drive down costs in the same way that its tough bargaining has brought down prices for shoppers. We wanted to see what was more effective, what works and what doesn't work, said Lisa Woods, the company's senior director of U.S. healthcare. If we can't impact and influence cost or how cost trends are increasing, then we need to change or do something different. Companies are the largest providers of health insurance in the U.S., giving more than 150 million people access to coverage. While premiums have soared 55% over the past decade, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, most firms have done little tinkering with their health plans beyond asking employees to pay higher contributions and out-of-pocket costs. But the outcry over rising costs is growing. President Donald Trump has decried high drug prices, while his administration has taken aim at middlemen they have faulted for a lack of transparency. FDA Administration Commissioner Scott Gottlieb this week called out drug plans over a rigged payment scheme. That pushback is contributing to a rapid-fire refashioning of the healthcare business. A wave of previously unconventional deals has joined together insurers and pharmacy benefit managers, culminating in Thursday's announcement that Cigna Corp. Agreed to acquire drug plan giant Express Scripts Holding Company. Increasing the pressure on healthcare companies, employers aren't sitting around waiting for the industry to get costs under control. Amazon in January said that it, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, and Berkshire Hathaway Inc. would set up a new business to improve their employees' health care. Berkshire's chairman Warren Buffett called high health costs a tapeworm afflicting the U.S. economy. Other companies are beginning to experiment more quietly, too. Like Walmart, employers from private equity giant Blackstone Group LP to postage meter maker Pitney Bowes are trying new ways of getting better care at lower cost. Walmart has been testing its new plans, known as Accountable Care Organizations, or ACOs, for 2 years. ACOs, which can be set up by employers on their own or with an insurer's help, limit consumers to a smaller group of care providers. ACOs also include financial incentives for doctors and hospitals. For example, health providers may receive extra money for making sure workers get treatment for chronic conditions, such as diabetes or heart disease or cancer screenings. Employers often balk at making big changes for fear of upsetting workers, especially in a tight labor market, said Suzanne Del Banco, executive director of Catalyst for Payment Reform, a group of companies, including Walmart, that are pushing insurers and providers to do a better job of caring for workers. But high health costs are squeezing workers and firms alike. Employers are aware that Americans are increasingly willing to make trade-offs between choice and affordability, she said. It's a different era. Walmart says its ACOs have seen lower hospital admissions and emergency room visits, while trips to primary care doctors have risen. It's too early to say whether Walmart is saving money, said Woods, the health executive, though premiums tend to be lower for workers who choose the plans. ACOs are catching on with other companies. About 21% of large employers are using them, though most are using ACOs set up by insurers, according to a National Business Group on Health survey. The Medicare health program for the elderly also embraced ACOs, pushed by provisions of the 2010 Affordable Care Act. The organizations take several forms, and the results have been mixed. Some have shown cost savings, while others haven't, and some systems have dropped out as well. Finding ways to generate more savings or limit future cost increases is difficult, according to Robert Galvin, chief executive of Blackstone's Equity Healthcare, which handles health benefits for 51 companies, including the private equity giant itself and firms it owns. Equity Healthcare has kept per-member cost increases below those of other corporations every year since it was started in 2009, according to its website. Typically, Equity initially controls expenses by shifting workers to health plans with higher deductibles while nudging them to get care for chronic ailments and take their medications. It began using ACOs set up by United Health Group and Aetna, Inc. in 2017. What we've been doing for a long time has clearly hit a wall, he said. When you look at how much people are paying versus their take-home pay, we've gotten to a time when it's getting to be unaffordable for normal people. So we have to do something different. Galvin is skeptical of the savings potential from ACOs, pointing to the disappointing results from Medicare's experiments. Some will be able to deliver better care, and I think many won't. And I think the question is, what are the key things that differentiate them, Galvin said. United, Aetna, and Cignacorp say their accountable care arrangements offer lower costs and improved quality, though they provide limited data to support that. That is where we need to leave this article today. I thank you for tuning in to Sound Body. Stay well, and please come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, WXXI.org.